Welcome to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm Graham Richmond, and this is your wiretaps for Monday, April 26th, 2021. I'm joined by Alex Brown from Cornwall, England. Alex, are you getting excited for the Football Super League?
Well, thankfully, sense has prevailed, and we are not doing
it. Yeah, I heard that some of the teams had decided to back out when all the chaos erupted, and I saw a really funny quote which said, "The Super League, as it turns out, is neither super, nor is it likely soon to even be a league." So yeah. There you go. Yeah. Do you have the skills needed to succeed in your MBA? Harvard Business School Online's Core Business Essentials program is an MBA prep course that offers immersive, real-world learning, 100% online. Prepare for the classroom with the program Harvard Business School offers to incoming students. Visit hbsonline.co today. So what's going on, though, in the world of MBA admissions these days?
Yeah, I mean, things are pretty quiet. We've got HBS, I think, has its deadline for the 2+2 program upcoming. But basically, we're sort of in the midst of round three. So folks are interviewing round three. It's a shorter cycle for round three. So it won't be long, maybe a couple more weeks, and then we'll start seeing results from round three coming in. And we know round three is a very tough round for candidates to gain admission. And then there's also several folks, obviously, in that sort of waitlist mode, and they'll be evaluated at the same time, and so forth, as well as lots of deposit deadlines for schools. So schools are going to start getting a better sense of the makeup of their incoming classes and how many additional seats they will have available. Things are starting to sort of, transition to sort of, you know, from the school standpoint, for that class makeup process.
Yeah, and you've actually just reminded me that we're running a survey about students who have offers, and it's basically a way for us to learn more about, like, what goes into everyone's decision-making process. So we're actually giving out $20-$25 Amazon cards to people who take this survey. So and between me and you, like, there aren't going to be a ton of people take the survey. So, like, if someone fills it out, their odds of getting a gift card are actually pretty good. And basically, the only requirement is that you have to have been admitted to business school this past cycle. So in the 2020-21 admissions cycle. And you can go to bit.ly/MBA admit survey. That's all one word. And the letters MBA are capitalized. So that's bit.ly/MBA admit survey. And we're really hoping to hear from as many people as possible, because I'm personally really fascinated about this. Like, what role does scholarship play in, you know, decision making? What role does, you know, location, or, you know, conversations you've had with alums, or, I mean, there's so many factors that go into this. And I'm kind of looking forward to seeing all the responses and learning about this. And I mean, this is kind of what we talk about anyway when we do Decision Wire and trees, yeah. Right? So should be interesting.
Yeah, let me ask you a quick question, though, Graham. I mean, it does sound fascinating, so I'd be really excited to read the results. How long will it take someone to complete this
survey? Oh, yeah,
survey?
Good point. It's short. It's like less than 10 minutes. So shouldn't take time at all. And I would say, you know, if you're listening to this podcast and you do have an acceptance letter from a school, like, just do us a favor, fill it out. It really helps us to learn about the applicant community. We share this information with schools just so that, you know, they can learn how to better serve candidates. So it's really good for the kind of applicant community to do this.
Nice. Is it only for those that have an admissions offer in hand? What about the guys that blank out?
Yeah, unfortunately, you've got to have offers, because okay. There are a lot of questions in the survey about, like, how do you decide where to go? So, yeah. So
makes
those
sense.
Folks can take it next year, hopefully, if they end up getting in off a list or something, you know, they could take it, because we're going to leave the survey in the field for, you know, at least a couple of weeks here. So we'll see. Over on the website, we're still doing the Real Humans alumni series, and we did, you'll be interested in this, we did somebody who works at InBev, which I think is a maker of many famous alcoholic beverages. So we had a candidate who works there, and then we also had someone who is at Ford that we featured. Those are just in the last week or so.
Nice.
So those are fun reads. We have a bunch of events coming up that I wanted to mention because I think they're going to get packed. So I'm just going to give people a heads up. We're doing an employers event this Wednesday, April 28th, with JP Morgan and Bain. And you can sign up in advance. You go to bit.ly/CA recruiter panel. That's all one word. And basically, you know, we're going to pepper questions. We're going to pepper Bain and JP Morgan's heads of MBA recruiting with questions about what it takes to get a job in their organization, what those jobs look like. Do you have to do a summer internship in order to really be eligible to get a full-time offer? So we're going to ask them lots of good questions. I think this is relevant for anyone who is either holding an offer to business school or even just starting to apply and curious about consulting and banking jobs. So that'll be fun. We also have, Alex, I just was kind of telling you before we started recording today's episode, but we have like the weeks that follow, May 5th and May 12th, both are Wednesdays, and these are events. All of our events are always at noon Eastern, so the same goes for this week's recruiter one. But we're doing this application workshop series with top schools, and this is more for people who are applying next season. So on May 5th, we're going to gather together the admissions directors from Berkeley, Columbia, Wharton, Michigan, and Texas, McCombs. And we're going to ask them questions about their application process, about, and it's not going to be just kind of high level, you know, kind of info session type stuff. It's going to be a bit more nitty gritty, like, hey, you know, if I have a weakness, where do I, you know, present that in my file? Or what's a great recommendation letter look like? And we're going to get into some of the schools, you know, their essay questions, everything. So should be really interesting. And then a week later, we've got five other schools coming. We've got Duke, Cornell, Tuck, UNC, and Yale. So these are like 60-minute roundtables, and then the Q&A portion will be different in that we're just going to run a 60-minute session, and then each school will go into their own breakout room where you can interact with the school directly and ask questions. So that should be fun. We did some of these last fall for the first time ever, and they went incredibly well. So I'm looking forward to that. Alex, maybe you'll have time to join us and help moderate some of these breakout rooms and stuff, but we'll see. I'm really looking forward to it, though.
Yeah, no, very good. Well done. Yeah.
Yeah. So to sign up for those, I think it's bit.ly/MBA app overview. So we got a whole bunch of short links that we're giving out on the podcast, but you can always find all this stuff at clearadmit.com if you want to sign up for any of it. Alex, we're going to do Clubhouse meetings. We continue to do those. We're changing the day, though. So the first new time slot will be a week from this Monday. I think we're going to do it at noon Eastern. So that'll be fun. I've really been enjoying those events we've been doing on Clubhouse, just a nice way to interact with some of our listeners. So we'll keep doing those.
Yeah, no, I think they work out really good. Obviously, the audience is quite small, but one thing that I've really appreciated is you're seeing some of the same folks coming back and asking sort of more sort of nuanced questions and so on and so forth. So yeah, I'm really enjoying it and meeting some really cool people.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the last thing I'll say before we get into the wiretap stuff is that if you want to reach out to Alex and I, just send an email to info@clearadmit.com. Use the subject line wiretaps, and we love getting those emails, so we'll write you back if you send us a note. I know I got a couple in my inbox I got to respond to from folks that we've been, you know, trading emails with, so that's a lot of fun. And yeah, and I would say this is that time of year where a lot of you have maybe just begun listening to the podcast, and some of you are, you know, maybe holding offers to schools and on your way off to school. So be sure to, you know, spread the word, let everyone know about the podcast. It's something that Alex and I love to do, and we need you guys to listen to keep doing it. So, yeah. So should we get on with our wiretaps portion, Alex?
Sounds good. Yeah.
All right. So this is wiretaps candidate number one. So we have an apply wire entry, and this person's got two schools on the target list, and they are Duke and UNC. They want to start business school in the fall of 2022. This person's an Army officer. They're actually working as a human resources officer in the U.S. Army in North Carolina. They'd love to get into consulting, maybe even entrepreneurship when they're done with business school. They've got a lot of consulting firms on the list, ranging from the likes of Bain and BCG, as well as Deloitte, Ernst & Young, PwC, et cetera. So there's a broad range of consulting targets there for post-MBA. The GRE score is a 314, GPA 2.7, and they have 6 years of work experience. And they explain that They have a red flag in their profile. They know it. It's the GPA. And they're hoping that by completing MBA math, which is a class they're taking right now, and that, you know, the success that they've had in their career, that may help, them to get over the hurdle. They also mentioned they'll probably apply to NC State as well, because they really want to stay in that Research Triangle area. I wanted to ask you what you make of this candidate. And I also wanted to share that they said, Graham and Alex, I love the podcast. It makes my Monday commute enjoyable, which is saying a lot. And so then they actually say, if you're ever looking for a call-in guest to share their perspective on the application process, let me know. So we may have to reach out to this person as they begin applying. But what do you make of their candidacy? Because this is a bit of a red flag with the GPA.
Yeah. The combination of the GPA and the GRE is going to be make things tricky, for sure. So what we understand from the candidate is they're going to retake the GRE and try to boost that score into the three. Well, they said several points. I would argue that they really should be targeting sort of around 320, in that sort of 320s. Their GPA is low. They recognize that relative to other candidates applying to these programs. That said, you know, it's kind of your typical story. They lack motivation and guidance and so forth. And then they joined the National Guard, I think it was, and then that sort of helped them gain a lot of focus and ended up on the Dean's List and stuff. So actually, there might be a nice little bit of a story there that you highlighted actually in some of your feedback, Graham, in terms of that was then, this is now. So if that's the case and they complement that with a strong GRE score, that's going to be super, super helpful. I would agree that their career probably is their strong suit right now, so showing that impact as an Army recruiting officer and so forth. I'd like to see a little bit more focus on the goals and the sort of the why MBA. You don't want to fall into the bucket of someone that's getting the MBA to transition into something, but not clear in terms of what that something might be. So making sure that they've thought about that long-term goal. They talk about entrepreneurship, but, and again, in your feedback, I think you emphasized this point. It would be nice if it sort of related to some of this sort of human resource work that they've been doing and so forth. But having some direction there would help. Going into consulting straight after the MBA actually makes a lot of sense for a military candidate. That's probably the most common trodden path. So the short term is probably fine. Just the longer term, it would be good to have a better sense there. I know we talked before coming on air this idea that they want to be in the Raleigh-Durham area, and is that restricting their opportunity for applying to schools? For schools that will allow them to continue their career in that Raleigh-Durham area, there's probably a wider net of schools that they could look at. And you mentioned Emory, Darden, and a couple of others. I'm wondering also if the constraint is more towards sort of they already have their house, their family settled in the area, and therefore that's where they want to do their MBA from, their absolute current location. So anyway, those are some of my thoughts, Graham.
Yeah, and I think that is, you raise a really good point about, you know, what is driving this decision to stay in the kind of Raleigh, Durham, Chapel Hill area? And is it like because they just want to stay there and work afterwards? And if so, as I pointed out, and you're mentioning here, you know, they could throw in some other schools. The thing that was concerning to me was, I really like this candidacy. Like, I know there are some glaring red flags right now, but I think that this candidacy could be strong. And I worry that if it's not strong enough to get into Duke or UNC, there still might be other schools that exist between those schools and NC State, which is their kind of fallback option. And I don't want them to leave, anything on the table, right? So I was like, oh, what about, you know, Georgia Tech or Emory or, you know, there are other, and sometimes, you know, just applying to a greater number of schools can increase your odds too. So I was kind of worried about that. I do think that the admissions lesson from this entry is, for me, a kind of that was then, this is now strategy. But that strategy only works if the now is really strong. And so I think they can handle the that was then part by saying, you know, look, my GPA was no good, but if you look, there's an upward trend. I got my stuff together and really did well towards the end of college. I think they ended up on the dean's list in the last couple of semesters. And so that part works. But then for the this is now to work, they need to, you know, obviously do well in MBA math, but they also need a better GRE score, yeah, as you said. And and I think that's the part that makes me worried, is that it's probably worth it for them to like get a tutor or take a class if they can, just to like try to boost that score into the 320s, because that'll really start to tell a different storyline. So that's my thing, is that I think this candidacy needs a that was then, this is now strategy. But in order for that strategy to work, they're going to need to add some points to the GRE. I think the rest of it is, you know, it's an interesting military background. Schools love military candidates. They're working in HR. People analytics is a hot field. I was suggesting they, you know, kind of weave some of that into their long-term plan or something to kind of keep things consistent. But yeah, I think this candidate probably has a lot to offer. And I would hate for the test to keep them, you know, to have them kind of fall short because of the test.
Yeah, no, I think absolute fair points. I think, yeah, we wish this candidate the best of luck, and hopefully they're listening to this on today, Monday. Very good. But yeah, I think the most critical aspect is get a new GRE score, do well, you know, complete MBA math, get a new GRE score.
Yeah. Yeah, and actually, given their comments, I was thinking of a new, we could, you know, we try to figure out ways to pitch this podcast to get more people to listen. I was thinking, maybe, well, I don't know what you think of this, but I was thinking we could say something like the Clear Admit podcast, better than a traffic jam.
You know, I like that.
So anyway, all right, well, let's move along. And yeah, best of luck to that poster. Let's talk about Wiretap's candidate number two. So this is another ApplyWire entry, which, Alex, makes me think we're kind of heading into the next cycle here, because we're getting a lot more of these, I guess. So we've got, this person's targeting 11 schools for now. So it's, you know, CMU, Columbia, Cornell, Dartmouth, Duke, Chicago, UCLA, UVA, Vanderbilt, Washington University in St. Louis, and Yale. They're going to start school in the fall of 2022. They've been working in commercial banking, and they want to pivot over into investment banking, which we're going to talk about. They've got a whole bunch of, you know, investment banks on the list, from Bank of America, Barclays, Citibank, Goldman, JP Morgan. I mean, the list goes on. Wells Fargo, etc. So they have a very high GRE score of 333, a GPA of 3.4, 7 years of work experience. They're in Africa, and they mentioned that they've got, you know, the 7 years of experience working in business development for an international commercial bank. They lead a team of four, and they've been successful in, you know, in achieving their kind of targets at work. They also belong to two different NGOs, and they served as a student leader when they were doing their studies. So, Alex, what do you make of this candidate? Because it's not so often that we see commercial bankers. So let's talk about that. Like, what do you make of this candidacy overall?
Yeah, overall, I think this can be a terrific candidate. I mean, we don't see many 333 GREs, so that just seems super high to me. So I don't know what the equivalency of that would be on the GMAT, but it's got to be in the high 700s somewhere. Commercial banking is you know, may be considered the ugliest stepchild of investment banking or something like that. But this person's worked in business development. There's obviously, which I think is quite an interesting role, regardless of the industry you're in. As long as they can show impact, they're managing four people and so on and so forth, I think they probably have some really interesting work experience to address. They're also involved in NGOs. And my response to that, again, on ApplyWire was, that's fine, as long as you're not just checking the boxes. As long as you're doing something meaningful and impactful through the vehicle of NGOs, that's what ADCOM is looking for. So from that perspective, as long as they can dot those I's or whatever, then that's going to be very, very good. They want to go into investment banking. That's great. I think they've probably got the chops for that. Again, they've got a ridiculously high GRE score. Their GPA is 3-4. I'm almost assuming it's probably a pretty analytical undergraduate degree, but I don't know that. I'm curious what the long-term goal is here. So, and this actually is going to be quite important because, you know, they want to go into investment banking, but let's say they want to go into investment banking in New York and they want to make a boatload of money and, you know, rule the world from New York and everything. Whilst that's fine, I'm not sure how much impact that means this person's going to have outside of, you know, obviously benefiting themselves extremely well. Now, if they're planning to return to Africa and they're planning to get into some sort of role that's really going to help in the development, you know, the commercial development of Africa, then that tells me something very different. And that's the sort of alum a top business school is seeking. So I guess my long-winded point here, Graham, is because this person's, I think they're from Africa, their current location is Africa. That's what we do know. But top business schools want folks who are going to make an impact on the world in the long run. If they're going back to Africa, they have a greater opportunity to do that, or at least that's my perception.
Yeah, that's a good point. We didn't get much on the long-term plan. It would be interesting for them to have some sort of a plan that involves a return home, assuming they're, I mean, we don't really know, like, as you said, we know they're currently in Africa. Let's assume though that that's where they're from and that they might return there. That could be an interesting story to tell, particularly if there's some, you know, aspect of finance that they want to get involved in, you know, microfinance or whatever it might be that they think could be useful.
Yeah,
by the way, a 333 is like a 740, 750, I think, on the GMAT. So it's a good score for sure. And it would put them above average at, you know, the schools on their list. They did note, I wrote to them, and I was like, okay, everything looks good. I'd left a comment and I was like, but your school list doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I was like, there are too many schools on the list. And I was puzzled by the lack of some of the big kind of finance schools. And so they actually wrote back and said that they'd given it some thought and that they added, you know, Wharton to their list. And they basically are going to apply to only 5 schools in round one, and then they'll adjust accordingly. So they mentioned they're going to look at Wharton, Chicago, Tuck, Darden, and Cornell in round one. That makes a lot of sense to me. Those are all, you know, strong programs. There's a little bit of a spread in terms of, you know, ranked kind of from the very top tier with, say, at Wharton all down to, you know, there's some schools that are more like top 16 or so. So we'll see how the chips fall for them. But I'm confident that they're going to, you know, get a good result as long as they put the time into the application and, you know, make sure the, you know, the essays are strong, everything else. I think they have a good chance. I do feel that, you know, like you said, like this person, yes, they're in commercial banking, which is really different from investment banking. And sometimes admissions officers may view it as kind of, you know, less appealing or something. But it sounds like they've really achieved something. You know, they're leading a team. They've hit some milestones. They're doing biz dev for the bank. So this isn't like, you know, it's not like they're a teller or something. You know, they're doing big things, right? So I feel like this is all possible. And then the only other thing, yeah, just be good to get clarity on those long-term plans and where this person wants to land. But it's a great candidacy. I think there's a lot of promise here and potential.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so I want to thank that person for sharing their profile. Alex, let's move on and talk about Wiretap's candidate number 3. So this is a Decision Wire entry, and this candidate is undecided, as they often are, at least the ones we feature on the show. This person applied to Cornell, Dartmouth, Duke, MIT, Wharton, and Yale, and they ended up getting 2 offers. They were admitted at Cornell with a $150,000 scholarship. It's actually the Park Fellowship at Cornell, which we can talk about. And then they also got into Tuck, and Tuck has given them $20,000. They're gonna be starting school this fall. They'd love to work in tech after business school. GMAT score was 760, and the GPA was a 3.5. This candidate is located in Chicago, and they indicate in their note that they need help. They're really torn deciding between Tuck and Johnson. They said that, you know, they know Tuck lands slightly ahead with rankings and is known for a very tight-knit community, but they mentioned Johnson is offering a lot of money and the leadership opportunities through the Park Fellowship. They want to know if they're overlooking anything and how to kind of make this decision. So, Alex, where should they go?
Yeah, this is a very interesting profile and an interesting decision. Just to sort of share our thoughts on where these schools land in the sort of rankings game, or at least my thoughts. Graham can then argue slightly differently. But I would say Cornell sits in a tier just slightly below Tuck and towards the bottom end of that particular tier. So it puts it in basically 15 or 16 in terms of overall rankings, whereas Tuck sits in the tier just behind the M7. So that sort of spots 8, 9 and 10, along with Haas and there's another one that I'm just
you're forgetting what maybe Yale and
yeah
Ryu,
sorry
those are the ones
Yale.
That often yeah
so Yale Haas and Tuck sort of sit ahead of, you know, the sort of the likes of Darden, Duke and Ross and whatever, and then it tends to be Cornell and Anderson in either order. So there's a little bit of a difference in the tiers here, I think, but that's obviously compensated by the offer that Cornell is making, that full ride Park Fellowship, which is, I think Graham would argue, is quite prestigious. And sort of it allows sort of programmatic opportunities in terms of leadership opportunities that are exclusive to the Park Fellows, I believe, in the Johnson program.
Yes.
So that all said, I think this becomes an absolute wash. It's a fit issue. It's, you know, 50% of folks are going to go to Tuck, 50% of folks are going to go to Johnson under these current circumstances, and you've just got to sort of really weigh the nuance of the fit issues in your case. And a couple of folks that have responded to this candidate's requests have responded with incredibly thoughtful insights, I think, that essentially say exactly the same thing. I would probably, my initial reaction to this would be to go to Tuck to see if I could get an increased offer.
Mm-hmm.
And if I could get an increased offer, that obviously changes the calculus a little bit. But yeah, other than that, Graham, I don't know. That's my answer.
So you don't know. All right. So Alex is stumped. But they, you know, it's funny. They say in their notes that they are talking to Tuck about money. So it's possible that there could be some, you know, additional funds, although as the person points out in their comments, they're like, there's no way that Tuck's going to give them as much money.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, a challenge. What's, I think, great about this situation is that a couple of people, actually a number of them from our community, have posted and, you know, kind of shared similar situations or how they went about thinking about this or how they would think about it. So that was cool to see. Yeah, my thing is that the Park Fellowship is prestigious. It's something you can put on your resume. You know, I mean, you're a Park Fellow at Cornell. And so, you know, that's worth something. I honestly think that both schools offer a really nice, close-knit student body and community. I've spent time on both campuses. They're similar in this respect. I mean, neither of them are in a major city. Ithaca is a bit bigger than Hanover, obviously, but they're both kind of have a small town, college town, campus feel. And so you get that close-knit, close-to-nature experience at both programs, which I think, I mean, personally, I think is terrific. I always, I didn't do it myself because I had to take into account my, you know, spouse's considerations when I went to business school, but I always was kind of fantasizing about, you know, going off to the woods for a couple of years to get out of the rat race. And I think both of these schools offer that in spades. So that's fine. I guess then you get into like network. And the poster did mention this thing about, oh, Tuckies are incredibly passionate about having gone to Tuck.
Mm.
And, you know, that's appealing to them. And I think there's someone who posted saying, okay, but how important is that to you? Like, you know, think about your undergraduate experience. How often are you using your current undergraduate network? And, you know, is the difference big enough to move the needle here? So I thought that was an interesting thing to consider. I also, no one mentioned it, but I thought it was worth noting that these are both Ivy League schools. And so in some measure, you're getting access to the same network. I mean, they do some things together post-MBA. A lot of these schools share resources and will do joint events. And I've mentioned that before on the podcast, but I think that's something to think about as well. We didn't talk about it, but I mean, you know, the money comes into play, not just in terms of, they're giving them enough money to make the schools sort of be in a similar tier. It's that, you know, the person, like, I don't know this person's like financial situation. And so they might want to think about that too.
Yeah.
That's fair. That's a fair reason to make a choice. And it isn't this is a fair amount of money too. So if someone had taken, you know, $130,000 difference here, if you took that 130 and put it all in, in the stock market and wait 20 years, you know, that would be a ton of money. So it's worth thinking through. And I agree with you. It's kind of a wash. I'm having a lot of trouble telling this person where to go.
I'm going to throw one question at you because I wrestle with this a little bit on these types of decisions. Let's say, again, Cornell sort of is in that 15-16 spot in terms of ranking and Tuck's in that sort of 8 to 10 spot.
Mm-hmm.
We're much more focused on tiers versus ordinal rankings, but it seems to be that's where they sit. So if that is the case, then I would argue that the overall student body at Tuck is going to be slightly better than the overall student body at Johnson. Now, having said that, there are going to be individuals at Johnson that are better than some individuals at Tuck, right? So I'm not making that case at all. But the overall quality at Tuck is going to be slightly higher. I mean, that makes sense, right? The overall quality of students, let's say at Harvard, is going to be higher than the overall quality students at Stern or something like that, right? So I'm asking you this to ask, because this never really gets discussed. Is that an important factor, who you're surrounding yourself with over the course of that 2-year period?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really important. And that's why, I mean, you know, to some extent, I think some of the rankings, I want to say it's U.S. News, they look at selectivity, right, as a way to determine. So I think it's important.
Yeah.
I mean, I will say, you know, we're dealing with the sort of the top of the top. And so I feel like both schools probably have really impressive, diverse student bodies. So it's the question is like, how tangible is that difference between, say, Tuck and Cornell?
Yeah.
Say Stanford, right? Stanford has the pick of the litter. They can kind of take whoever they want. People tend to come. Same with Harvard, I guess, right? So
that
probably counts for something. I think the thing that's a little challenging, and this is the bummer, right, with COVID, is that ordinarily this candidate would probably go and spend a weekend at both schools doing admitted student activities and hang out for, you know, 48 hours or whatever with all of their classmates to be and even some current students or, you know, faculty and get a real feel for the school. And I know that the schools are doing amazing work bringing that experience online, but I mean, it's still challenging. And I think it's harder to get the same feel in a control. Like, you know, you think about the online experience is always somewhat controlled, right? And I remember when I went to welcome weekends for the schools that I was admitted to, it was those conversations I had with my future classmates that were totally off the cuff, over by the hors d'oeuvre stand or, you know, whatever, just conversations about, oh, what are you thinking of doing? And what did you do before business school? And what other schools were you accepted to? And so it's, you know, that's probably harder to replicate in these virtual environments. But again, this candidate's not going to go wrong. These are both great schools. So we'll have to see where they land. Hopefully they'll post a follow-up and let us know what they decide.
Yeah, no. This is one of your classic conundrums. You've got a full ride at one school and an offer at another school from a higher tier. That's your classic conundrum.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so that concludes our episode this week. I mean, we've gone through our three candidates. As always, Alex, thanks for picking them out, and thanks to those candidates for posting. We'll come back in 1 week's time and do this again. And Alex, you know, this podcast is better than a traffic jam. We'll have to keep working on slogans, but that's one for to start with.
Nice.
But yeah, thanks again, Alex. And I guess we'll see you next week.
Yeah, brilliant. Best of luck. Stay safe, everybody. Take care.